The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here, right now. And you're listening to Liberty Bell Smack. I am your host, Marianne Castello, and it is that hour for that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style here every Thursday evening, primetime drive time, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can listen five ways, whichever works best for you. If we have gone dark out of Philadelphia and you can't tune in on WWDB AM Talk 860, you can listen to us on HD2 radio station 97.5, or download the WWDB radio app, or go to WWDBAM.com and click and listen live. And to talk to us, you can actually call us at 888-329-3306. And I am throwing out there now that the fifth caller will win a prize if you dial 888-329-3306. And we have a power pack show for you this evening. And right now I'm going to bring on my next host. He is a broadcast vet born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the ring with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with SiriusXM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDB AM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show and the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. How are you?
Well, I'm doing really good. Sorry, I came in a little before the pre-chat. It was the UPS man. I got your package from Rahway, New Jersey. I opened it up and it was the signed 36 double D bra. So I'll hang that up in the corner somewhere. Thanks for the great birthday gift.
I'm glad you think they're a set of bodacious tatas. Good for you. I'm so glad that you got them. And you know what? We're going to see. We have our other host waiting in the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia to see what he thinks. He is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware County, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all of that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series games and published his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting, and here he is. Let's welcome our host, Sal Tartaglia. Hi, Sal.
Hi, Mel. Thanks for having me. And I don't know if that description describes a man that can't figure out what he wants to do or just staying really busy. But I just like to say real fast before we start that my birthday's in January, Mayor.
I got it written down, January 17th, to be exact, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
And you know what? Speaking of birthdays, Sal, our host last week was his birthday. He got his birthday song. Obviously, he got his birthday gift. But today, he got a gift. Happy birthday, Grandpa. How are you?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that water breaks. It's just a matter of time before the baby comes out, third girl. And, you know, sometimes you're blessed with boys. Sometimes you're blessed with girls. Looks like we've created a harem here with girls on this side of the family.
Oh, sure. You're outnumbered.
Yeah. Family's what it's all about, Mark.
It absolutely is. And speaking of family, Sal, not only family, but I know that you have a lot of friends there in Philadelphia, right?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell me about one of them?
Well, one of my friends is named Joey Turner, and he owns JT's Auto Body. And I got to tell you, I've had a lot of my work done there. And for superior auto body repairs at very reasonable prices, Bring your damaged vehicle to JT Auto Body, located at 416 Primus Avenue in Fulcroft, Pennsylvania. Call him at 610-534-1643 for expert work performed by owner Joey Turner's staff of certified technicians. Again, that number, 610-534-1643.
Wow. See that auto body work? We don't need body work just yet, any of us on here. And without further ado, I want to get to our special guests because it's, like I said, it's a power pack show. Are you guys in agreement with that or what?
Absolutely.
Oh,
I think so. So here we go. He is a former American professional baseball catcher who played for 12 years in Major League Baseball for the Philadelphia Phillies, St. Louis Cardinals, Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Chicago White Sox. In 879 games, he posted a .268 batting average with 185 runs, 18 home runs, 294 RBIs, and 321 bases on balls. Defensively, he recorded a .992 field percentage as a catcher and is a Gold Glove Award winner and has been inducted into the UMass Lowell Athletics Hall of Fame. He coached for junior varsity teaching, catching, and hitting at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, and worked for ESPN as an analyst for Little League and college baseball. If you're from Pittsburgh, we welcome Mike Lavallee, and if you're from everywhere else, we're going to welcome Mike Lavallee to Liberty Bell Smack. How are you, Mike?
Doing great. I love the last name pronunciations, being playing all over the country. I think Montreal was the only place that got it right since I've got the French heritage, but it was always nice to have your name mispronounced in a big league ballpark.
I've gone through many mispronunciations too. 9 letters in my last name. People get lazy. They just see it and they just whatever. I've been called Tarantula. You know, like, where did they get that from? But in any event, Mike, it's a pleasure to have you. I saw in your bio that you were born in Charlotte, and I'm just curious. They have no baseball down there. Is there any noise about trying to get a team located in that region?
Well, I haven't heard anything. I think. You know, baseball right now is kind of in trouble. They've got a big bargaining session that is due up here in the off season. From what I've heard through the grapevine, they've got some issues that they need to take care of, or there may possibly be another work stoppage. So it's pretty dicey right now.
Yeah, we don't need that. I remember strikes had a very deleterious effect on my squad. In 80, we won the title. And then in 81, there was a strike. We were in first place in the first half of the season. They had that split season fiasco thing. And that didn't bode well. And then 93, we didn't win, but we played a six-game thriller against Toronto. And then the next year, there was another stoppage, but we weren't anywhere near first place. But it just seemed like an omen. Every time we get to the dance, you know, baseball stops playing. So I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen again. But in any event,
no, it was. I went through the stoppage in '94, yeah. And it was devastating.
Yeah.
It was horrible for the game. And nobody won. You know, everybody can argue whichever side of the fence you're on. That, you know, the rich are getting richer, and who cares? But when it comes down to it, you know, the game is a great game,
yeah.
And for it to be stopped, there's a whole lot of folks out there that depend on their livelihoods,
yeah.
You know, through the game.
Yeah.
So it's something that's far reaching, and hopefully they won't have to see it again.
I remember the effect it had. Tony Gwynn had a shot at hitting 400 that year, like 394, I believe, something like that. And
yeah,
you know,
I also had a shot at hitting 400 before I would have gotten like 200 hits in a row.
Hey, Mike, last week we had Jason Kendall on, and we were trying to give a recollection of Philadelphia. I know it's a city where they might create a little more cracks in that Liberty Bell. Who knows? They might, if they get mad enough, take the Rocky statue and throw it on the field and everything. Give us a recollection of the city as a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates when you came through there. How tough is it in that city to play baseball?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go you one step further, Mark. Okay, my first time
whenever I get called up to the Phillies in 1984. I'm down in the bullpen. Mike Ryan, the Irish, was our bullpen coach. He's down there. Shane Raleigh's pitching. I'm catching him and just doing a little sideline. So all of a sudden, they open up the gates. A couple of guys up on the catwalk. You know, hey, Lavalier. Hey, Lavalier. Right? And I'm thinking, wow, this is a big league. They already know who I am. And so I wave to them, and they yell down, you know, you suck. You're a bullpen catcher. And so now I'm kind of devastated. And I go to Mike Ryan. I go, hey, Irish, what's up? And he goes, no. Don't worry. As long as they know your name, yeah, they love you. So that was my first introduction to walking in the vet from my first big league experience.
Bad publicity, wow. Still publicity, right?
Yeah. Oh boy, it was.
Hey Mike, I got a question. Did the Phillies convert you from third baseman to catcher, or was that somebody else?
No, that was in my first spring training was 1982. I signed in 81 as a third baseman. 82, they invited me to spring training, which I was a non-drafted free agent. So just getting the invite was a big deal. Right. And my scout told me, he said, look, they're going to make you catch. And so I says, well, what if I don't want to catch? They says, well, just stay home and carry a lunch bag. So I says, okay, well, let me learn how to catch.
I went the opposite direction. I went from catcher to third base.
That was in 82. I get called up to Philadelphia in 84. So obviously it was the correct career move, and very thankful for a couple guys, PJ Carey and Rolly DeArmas. Rolly's still with the organization in Clearwater. Those are the two guys that got me going on the right track.
Did you find the skill set from one position helped the other? I went the opposite way, and from catcher to third base, I wasn't the smoothest third baseman, but my ability behind the plate helped me at third. Like, that ball was not going to get by if I had to bite it. You know, I wasn't smooth, but I was effective. So,
well, you know what? There was other than really just using your hands, there wasn't a whole lot of similarities in the positions. You know, catch the ball, throw the ball. Yeah, but there was a lot of tough things, you know, stances and getting rid of the ball and learning how to block the ball properly. All of those things, like I said, I think I had an advantage because I didn't have any bad habits to break. Right. So that, you know, I think eventually, you know, that without a doubt, there's no chance that I would have stepped into the third base position because they had a pretty good guy named Schmidt or something. That was there.
Hey, Mike, you know, I had a chance to sit down with Jimmy Leland years back and tell me what it was like to play for him, because I'll tell you, you know, when you look at the Pirates of the 70s, they dominated, they went back and forth with the Phillies. The 80s was really tough. And then you guys seem to really take it to another level back up to the 70s with the 90-92 run, even losing Bobby Bonilla to the Mets. And Jimmy Leland looked like he was the common influence on that team. Take us through what it was like to play for that man.
Well, yeah, the calming was only if you had a couple of
baseball stuff right now, so I'm not even on.
Some figgy butts. Yeah, as long as he had those butts that were in his hands, he was good. But he was just tremendous
for the Phillies.
Hey, Bobby, I don't know if you can hear us. Your voice is interfering with the. Sorry.
He runs out of the room. It's like vaudeville.
Wow.
But getting back to Jimmy, you know what? You know what he did great? He made every guy on the team feel like he was an important part of the team. And one of the things that he would do on a daily basis, he would walk around during batting practice and get with pretty much everybody at least once a week. And it was a pretty cool thing because, you know, he was, I think, as brilliant as a baseball mind that I played for. But, you know, as a person, he was going to put you in position to succeed. And, you know, when that happens, obviously the team would succeed. And all of us were very confident in that fact. I mean, we didn't always agree with him, but, you know, his record speaks for itself. I mean, here's a guy that has had success wherever he went.
Yeah.
You were involved in three straight NLCSs,
and everything,
too.
But I have to tell you that if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack. It's the lip smack and trash talking good right now, right here. And if you are just tuning in, just so you know, we are on Facebook Live right now. So if you want to see all of our friendly faces and follow along with the show, you can do that. And if you'd like to call in and speak with our special guest, you can do so at 888-329-3306. And we are back with Sal and Mike.
I want to address the pirate situation, Mike. You were involved in three straight NLCSs, especially those last two with the Braves, seven-game thrillers. And you were the guy on the other side of that Sid Bream play. That's an iconic photograph. And then the next year, you wound up in a fourth one with the White Sox. And that's very rare for a guy to be in four championship series in a row. But I want to harken back before you were a Pirate, got traded to Pittsburgh when you were a Cardinal. And you were only there for a year or two, I believe. But you were involved in that the 85 series with Don Denkinger blowing that call. You guys really won the title, I think, that year. How did you feel about that? I know how it made me feel, and I wasn't even there.
Unfortunately, I didn't make the postseason squad to play in the World Series. Back then, you had one group that went to the playoffs,
right?
And that was your 25 guys. Okay. And I didn't make that 25 guy limit. So, but knowing all the guys, watching it, obviously it was devastating. The game was won. And you don't ever want to think that an umpire can, determine, a series.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that happen. And a lot of times, like Billy Buckner gets picked on for one thing.
Right.
There was a lot of things that led up to those things.
Right.
So just to, go down and just pinpoint one thing, man, it's not fair on Denkinger, but yeah, he blew the call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going back to Sid Bream, I still think he was out. When you
bent, I do too.
When you bent leg slide, okay, your foot's up in the air. Now, whenever you're going into second or third, you touched it because the base is up in the air. Home plate's level with the ground. If you try to get your foot down, you're going to break your ankle. So his top foot slid over the plate. I tagged him, but unfortunately, umpire didn't see it that way.
Great
but
point.
I signed every one of those pictures. He was out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Mike, let me add, that trade. I know Tony Pena was a big fan favorite in Pittsburgh going to St. Louis, and you and Andy Van Slyke came to Pittsburgh, and I liked it at the time because I said, this is going to be good. I like the play, both you guys and everything, and I said, it's going to be good. What was the reaction coming from St. Louis into Pittsburgh, replacing Tony Pena?
Well, I never had a pet snake, but if I had a pet snake and it got killed, that would have been what it felt like. You're going for a great baseball town in St. Louis to a troubled city, for that matter, in Pittsburgh. They had just gone through the drug trials with Pittsburgh, with the Pirates. They had three successive losing 100 games a season. The Cardinals, great organization. To be traded to Pittsburgh at the time, it was devastating. And I loved St. Louis. But Jim Leland and the rest of our teammates, we got our act together. It was it ended up being the best thing that ever happened. And really, it may be used a lot, but truly blessed that it did happen.
Well, till you guys got there, I was about ready to change my birth certificate and adopt another city because the city was in troubled times, and you called it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and everything about it. Yeah, actually, when we got traded, Andy and I were talking before they actually told us who we're going to. And we're sitting in the dugout in spring training at Al Lang Stadium. And we decided, all right, there's only two places we don't want to go. We don't want to go to Montreal, and we don't want to go to Pittsburgh. Well, at least we didn't go to Montreal.
Yeah.
Now, Now, if I was a hockey guy, oh, hell yeah, I want to go up and play in the Forum. Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, what was it? What's the deal in Montreal? I mean, everybody dresses up as an empty chair, it seems like.
Well, yeah, let's just say there's some cultural differences where, you know, it just I think there's a whole lot of folks that really didn't know the game very well. The stadium itself, Olympic Stadium, was a giant refrigerator, concrete, very plastic. It wasn't the nicest places. I mean, you had the only thing to eat there was smoked meat and drinking Labatt's, which Labatt's was good.
Right. It was better than Jerry Park, Mike, right? It was better than
I didn't make it to Jerry Park, but I heard stories.
Well, I know that we have a lot of places to play sports. And right now, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Marianne Costello, Mark Mancini, and Sal Tartaglia. And if you want to drop us a line at any time, you could do so at libertybellsmack@gmail.com. We take all opinions, good, bad, or indifferent, and we will argue them if we have to. Or you can call in and speak to our special guests at 888-329-3306. And waiting on the sidelines here comes another intro, guys. He is a former American professional ice hockey center who had an 18-year career in the National Hockey League and a Stanley Cup champion. He played with the Washington Capitals, Rangers, Los Angeles Kings, Boston Bruins, and the New Jersey Devils. He played 1,178 games, which he scored 320 goals and 408 assists for 728 points. He has had the distinction of being the second American-born hockey player to be selected in the first round of the NHL entry draft and the first player to play NHL directly from high school after being drafted. He coaches. He's made the cover of Sports Illustrated as the Can't Miss Kid, and he's been a marathon runner in the Boston Marathon, not once, but twice. Let's have a big Liberty Bell welcome to Bobby Carpenter. Hi, Bobby.
Yeah. How are you?
That's a lot.
Thank you.
We haven't talked to Bobby since Bear All Radio, Marianne.
Yes, and you survived that with us, Bob.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah, let's not confuse Philadelphia. We had our clothes on.
We did. Bobby didn't. That's what I found out. I'm just kidding.
That's funny.
Well, so, I know that you and Mark have been going back and forth here, and it's finally nice to meet you in person, Bobby. So thank you for joining us.
And, thank you.
You know, I have to tell you, my nephew I know is listening. His name is Nicholas, and he was a big, and still is, a New Jersey Devil fan. So I wouldn't be surprised if he calls in to talk to you.
I hope so.
He's there.
Hey, Bobby, 18 seasons, 4 cup finals. I mean, twice as an assistant coach, and you were on 3 cup winning clubs, all Devils. I mean, when you're looking at hockey today, how much has the sport changed since when you played?
Oh, it's changed dramatically. I mean, it's unbelievable how much it's changed. It's interesting because I keep in touch with through Facebook and all the different things. You keep in touch with people, and Randy Holt, who was one of the most inspirational, toughest players I had ever met in the NHL. And he still owns the most penalty minutes in the National Hockey League in one game. When he was with LA, and he was playing against Philadelphia. He held 67 minutes in penalties.
Wow.
And you say, how does he do that? There's only 60 minutes in the game, but he figured out how to do it. But anyway, we were talking, and you know, the game has changed so much is that when we were younger, he was talking about how much of a violent game it was. The era that we grew up in and played with was violent. And today, they want to allow the more skilled, the smaller players to see the talent and the archery of the game. And they did a great job with it. But when we played, it was not, it was a scary time to play.
Yeah, in a lot of those cities, and I can remember Pittsburgh, where they only drew like 6,000 in the heyday to go see him when the big teams came in. And even when, you know, when the Colorado Rockies, and a lot of people don't know this, but when they moved to New Jersey, that was a tough time to start in New Jersey. And, you know, to get that to where it was, to where you guys won cups, take us through that when the Devils finally became the Devils and coming from Colorado.
Well, I think, yeah, when they came to Colorado, Dr. McMullen was a phenomenal owner, entrepreneur. I mean, he was a doctor for a reason. And that's coming from when, I'm not going to say who said it, but that's when they came for the Mickey Mouse years to being an incredible organization. And I think, you know, Dr. McMullen was a very business oriented guy, and he needed help to figure out how we could involve business with sports. And in comes the best ever, Lou Lamoriello. And he left Providence, which I was going to go and play for him in Providence. And he came in and took his time, figured out how to do it, and it changed the whole thing around to be one of the best organizations in the NHL.
So let me ask you something. Boston seems to be a hotbed for American-born hockey players. Is that like a religion up there? I know my dad was from Rosendale, but when you look at Boston, I mean, it's almost like another country as far as players coming out of there. Stevens, you, the list can go on. Kachuk, I mean, what is it? Is it the water? Is it the pizza? What's up there? Is it the North End?
Well, you know, it's interesting too. Again, old school. It was Boston. It was Minnesota. It was all these different Michigan local areas that had big hockey. But in the middle of the 80s and the end of the 80s, the area code, the zip code didn't mean where you came to play hockey. I mean, Chris Chelios came from San Diego, and he goes to Wisconsin to play. So now it became a nationwide sport, which was great. Did we have more players? Absolutely. But we learned back in the mid 80s, late 80s, that you could play hockey anywhere. You could be from Florida, California, Texas, Colorado, and you had a chance to play. It wasn't Minnesota, Chicago, Detroit, and Boston anymore. And that's when USA Hockey did such a great job exposing the game and making sure that everybody had a chance to play.
Wow. Mike's got a question, I know. He's going to tell you, if you were playing in Montreal, he definitely signed with the Expos.
Well, Bobby, you know, I grew up in Manchester, New Hampshire. And I think we're about the same.
East age. Side or West Side? So in Manchester, it must have been East Side because they're all French.
No, La Valliere. Yeah, I was on the West Side there.
The West Side, hence Montreal. There you go.
So I grew up playing hockey, had a chance to play. But one of the things I want to add, I think the youth hockey leagues that we had up there, because we used to travel all over New England. And, you know, anywhere from there, you know, down to Woonsocket, all over Springfield, Mass, you know, around Acton, Boxborough, all around the Boston area. Hudson had great hockey. Mm-hmm. I know Berlin, New Hampshire was I think that was a big part. I had a chance to sign with the Sherbrooke Beavers when I was a junior in high school. And I said, well, I didn't like my chances as much as I did with baseball. So I didn't. So I've been a huge hockey fan, but hockey was just enormous in New Hampshire and all in New England.
We would drive on a Sunday morning. We would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We would drive up to Berlin and we'd play two games and come home at 5 o'clock on a Sunday. Berlin was one of the most, it was the beginning of hockey, and they had a lot of French people there. And come to find out later on, the late Red Gendron, who just passed away, was a coach at University of Maine. He coached with us for the Devils forever. that's where he was from. And we didn't realize how much of a hockey head hotbed it was. And like, I remember when I'm 7 years old, 8 years old, asked my dad, why are we driving all the way up there? Because we had such good hockey, but they were great competition. And it was a gauge. We could figure out where you were going to go, what you do. We were so young, we didn't even know that that's what was going on.
Hey, Bob, can you explain?
Later on, I had the chance at University of Lowell. I was recruited by Billy Riley to go play hockey and baseball. You know Billy.
I do know Billy very well.
So there happened to be a pretty good center iceman there that kept me like on the fourth or fifth line, made me quit. Mac T, Craig McTavish. And I went to school with him. What a credit. boy, you want to talk about the crazy man of crazy man when he was younger. But yeah, he got his act together. He's been great.
He's done a phenomenal job. I mean, he moved into the management part. He did a great job with Edmonton. I've seen Mac T all over the place, and he's done a great. He's just a true professional, and he's an asset to us in hockey. That's for sure.
Well, I can tell you this. We have two greats on our show this evening on Liberty Bell Smack. If you are just tuning in and to WWDB AM Talk 860 and We Were Dark, you can tune in on HD2 radio station 97.5. You could even go right now to Facebook Live to WWDB or the Liberty Bell Smack page and check out all these beautiful faces. And most of all, to call in to talk to us, because if you are the caller that calls in, you will win a prize. That number is 888-329-3306. And I want to bring the whole group together. You're all talking because this week, actually next week, is Thanksgiving. And we're thankful that you both, Michael and Bobby, are on the show today. So we're bringing it all together. Have a joy. Chat. It's fun.
Bobby, I'm gonna come out on this, and I've said it on other stations and part of the XM and stuff. You know, Jackie Robinson changed baseball, and when you look at basketball, it was Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. But let me tell you, I've always looked at the guy, and Muhammad Ali could have changed boxing, but Wayne Gretzky, your friend there, catapulted hockey to where it is now on the West Coast side of things, whether it's Vegas, Phoenix, Seattle, Anaheim, San Jose. And I think if he didn't come down here from Edmonton and to shed some light on this beach city that they call Los Angeles, I don't think hockey would have survived to where it is now. Any thoughts to that? And you and I go back a long time. But I'm going to prop your friend up, because I think nobody's changed a sport dramatically as he's changed the sport.
Well, I think everybody does it every generation. And it's interesting, like if you do, I'm a math guy. And if you do the numbers of the percentages of what players make in their era, and you go back to the first baseball player, hockey player that played in the 50s, and they were making X amount. Well, the normal people were making pennies, and they thought that they were the wealthiest people in the world. And you go to the next generation, it's all the same. Mathematically, it's all the same. $8 million today is the same as $1 million 25 years ago. So when they say, oh, are you so jealous that can't you believe they're making this much money? I'm like, well, I did. I had the fortune to do that in my time. It's the same thing. It's the same dollar value. It's how you take care of your money and how you invest it and how you can move on future. So with the personalities, it's the same thing. Bobby Orr changed hockey in the 70s, especially in Boston. It brought hundreds and hundreds of rinks to Boston. Well, Wayne Gretzky did the same thing. He was the next voice in the promotion of hockey. And here comes Connor McDavid. I mean, it happens all the time. It's never going to change in any sport. It's always going to be a focal figure. And wherever you're from, there's a couple of people that's where argument comes in. Well, is Connor McDavid better than this or that? Well, again, you get Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. I mean, doesn't matter. You have a group of people that end up changing the game. Salaries are change the game, and it goes forward and forward. So I remember I'm in high school, and I was a young kid. I was only a sophomore. I was 15 or 14. And Edmonton comes in, and they're going to play Boston, and they got Casper, who's supposed to check Gretzky. He's supposed to be this and that. And I go to the practice the next day, and a couple of my friends went that were older. They were seniors, and they went in. And I'm like, how'd it go? I'm like, what's the deal with this Gretzky guy? He goes, oh, he's pretty good. I'm like, pretty good? He goes, well, Casper couldn't even catch up to him, skate with him. He goes, yeah, Edmonton won like 7-4. He had like 5 points. I mean, those are the moments that the game changes. Yeah. And all these different athletes will change the game. And it will never change. It's only going to get better and better and stronger and more exciting.
And we have a game changer right here. We have a caller on the line. And I believe that Matthew is on the line. How are you, Matthew?
Pretty good, Marianne. Pretty good. Hello, Mark. Hello, Sal. First time in my life ever called into a Philadelphia radio sports radio station.
We so, appreciate it.
Yeah. Me too.
And we have
Matthew,
a winner.
You have won a prize. You're the caller that won the prize tonight.
And that prize is the nectar.
It's been a long time since I won a prize. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I like to talk Eagles and Sixers, if that's okay with you. You know, the Eagles. This game against New Orleans is going to be an interesting test for them. I mean, with this new ground game, I mean, I know New Orleans has the best rushing defense in the NFL, but the question I want to ask, the rhetorical question I want to ask is, has New Orleans ever faced a rushing offense where that was the main frame of their offense? In other words, in a pass-happy league, you know, yeah, it might be easy to stop the run, but can you stop the run all game long against a team that's emphasizing the run? I mean, that's going to be an interesting test for New Orleans there. I mean, if the Eagles, in my opinion, I think the Eagles' ground game is actually their best defense, okay? Because simple, if you can maintain possession, if you can move the chains, eat up clock, and still score points, I mean, actually, that is your best defense in that way, you know, because you're preventing the other team from maintaining possession and scoring, especially a rapid-fire offense like New Orleans. So, and the thing is, the Saints, they're only 5-4. I mean, they're not the same devastating team as they were last year when they had Drew Brees. I mean, this is a brand-new era. If the Eagles could actually steal a win here, I don't know, that's kind of dicey, but if they could steal a win, that's going to be a key sign of growth for the Eagles team. That's like a nice little turning point. I mean, if the Eagles had not lost to the Chargers, guess what? I think they would be the seventh seed in the NFL playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's how close it was. I mean, even when they lost to the Chargers, they weren't blown out. And I'm endorsing what Sirianni is doing. I think he's found a niche. I think he's found a new tactical niche, you know, where he creates his own identity, like Andy Reid created with his passing always identity. Chip Kelly created with his RPO option, you know, his RPO option offense. And now Sirianni's got this ground game. And I like it because whereas everyone else is going, you know, pass, you know, because it's 21st century, Sirianni's going retro. He's playing good 1970s football here. And actually, he's getting semi-decent results. I mean, if the Eagles had a semi-decent defense, they would be in the playoff hunt right now. And I like it. And I like to see them continue with it. And I think if they can gain yardage against New Orleans, they may not be able to win. But if they can keep it, if it's like a close loss, then I would interpret that as a symbolic victory in that sense. Well, you know, in other words, you're just a few players shy of really making a difference, in my view.
Good point, Matt. I agree. Since they committed to the run, you know, they're number one in the league, first of all. And they had 46 carries starting with the Lions, 39 the next week, and then 40 against the Broncos. And what's happening is it's opening up, you know, the play action and everything. I mean, Hurts' numbers, he had a 103.2 quarterback rating in that Broncos game. So, you know, one thing, you know, the hip bone connected to, and it's all because our defense right now, I mean, you know, if the line shores up, you know, we can carry the holes in the back end, I think, but they haven't played up to their billing lately. But you're right. You stay on the field, running the ball, eat up time. That's a good defense in a roundabout way. So I like what they're doing, too. But
well, since when did they give up on hockey in that town? He's really into the Eagles.
Well, I have to turn around and say thank you so much for calling in, and we can get your information to send your prize, which is the CD from the Nectar, the legendary rock band, who's going on tour in February, and yours truly is going with them. So wow. Please, you know, come on in, give us your address, all that information. We'll send that out to you, and we thank you so much for calling Liberty Bell Smack.
Thanks for your point, Matt. I'll be in touch.
And Sal?
Yes, I know.
You know what?
I don't have any more friends.
I
yelled at somebody the other day, and they're all mad at me now. No, my buddy Joey Turner. He runs a very good body shop, and it's located at 416 Primus Avenue, Fallcroft, Pennsylvania. And I bring my vehicles. I recommend family members, anybody that has a need for, you know, some dent work or even just to get, you know, pinstripes or paints, you know. He does a pretty good job. And his name is Joey Turner. And JT Auto Body, again, is located at 416 Primus Avenue in Fallcroft, PA. His number is 610-534-1643. Expert work is performed by all certified technicians in his shop. Again, call Joey at 610-534-1643, JT Auto Body.
And that's why Liberty Bell is a show that's all what it's cracked up to be. Right, Mark?
Well, yeah. You know, now we just find out Marianne's going on a tour with Nectar. So now I've got to, you know, confine with Bobby and Mike here to see if they can throw some extra blankets for Sal so we can sleep under the Liberty Bell.
Hey, can somebody answer me, Bobby, specifically? This is directed at you. Matter of fact, I have two questions. First of all, what is a HAB? The Montreal Canadiens nickname. What the heck does that mean?
It's a HAB.
Yes.
It's a habitat.
Habitat? And what does it mean?
Yes. It's a local, you lived in the area. You were one of the first people that were in the area.
Okay. It's French.
It's definitely French. Right. Like, Je me souviens is on the license plates of every Quebec. It means I remember.
Okay.
They had, way back in the 1700s, they had our 9/11, where they got obliterated by the Indians and certain people. So on their license plates, you'll see Je me souviens. Je me souviens, which means I remember, I will never forget. Right. And I wish we would interpret something like that into the United States about what happened with us, because obviously we seem to have forgotten what had happened to us back in 2001. And so habitant means you came in, you went, you lived in the area, and this is where you're at, and this is what we do. We trade, we play hockey, we play lacrosse, we play this. It's a foundation that they have from way, way back.
Thank you.
Wow.
Listen, they called you, speaking of remembering, they called you the can't miss kid, and for a lot of good reasons. First of all, you were drafted third overall, the highest for an American ever. Of course, it's been broken since, I think. I don't know if anybody did it before Patrick Kane, but he's been the latest one. And you were the first U.S. player to have 50 goals. And that 84-85 season, when you had 53 goals, Mike Gardner had another 50. They had a nickname for you two guys. What was it called? Like a 1-2 punch nickname.
They put on the program the next year. We were called, I don't know where they got the name, but it was pretty cool. But it was called the Gold Dust Twins, which I don't get. I mean,
WWE.
It would be appropriate for like a Las Vegas team today, but back then, I don't know if it was. But the interesting part about the can't miss kid title was really. Actually, it was kind of plagiarism, and there was some talk about who owned the rights to that, and So let me go back. So before I went to the NHL, I was a senior in high school. Things were going well. Went over, played in the World Junior Championships with Canada. Things were going. I was supposed to get drafted in the, you know, third or fourth round, and then things progressed. Now I go over and I have a great tournament. Now I go from being a second or third round pick to like the top five. So I come back home right after Christmas time. The draft is in June. Finish up our season with the hockey and high school. And one of the local papers, the Boston Globe, had a special on athletes every Sunday. So my turn. And they're like, it's a big, full page article that everybody would read about all these athletes. And like I said, again, sometime in the middle of March, it was mine. And they were asking me what my options were. And I'm like, well, I've got offered lots of scholarships. I said I could go to Harvard. I could go to BU. I could go to BC. I could go to Providence. I could go to UNH. I said mostly every school had offered me a full scholarship. And they said, well, how about the NHL is coming, and they say you got to get drafted in the top five. And I'm like, well, I heard that too. And they said, well, if you get drafted in the top five, what would you do? I said, I don't know. I said, I have some tough decisions to make. So basically at the end of the Boston Globe article, they said, well, you can go to any college you want to, or you can go to play in the pros. They said, yes. They said, so whatever choice you make, you can't miss. It's going to be a good decision. Right. I says, well, if you want to look at it that way, yes.
Right.
So Sports Illustrated takes it to the can't miss kid, thinking that I'm not going to not play in the NHL, which was totally not the whole purpose of the saying. It meant that no matter what decision I made as a 17-year-old,
right,
that it was going to work out for me, whether I went and played in the pros or I went to school and I went to business school and I became a stockbroker. It didn't matter. Whatever hockey gave to me, I was going to be successful at.
Being so young.
But sports.
Being so young.
And I was 17 years old.
Yeah. So how did that affect
Illustrated you? Turned it around like, oh, he can't not miss playing in the NHL. He's going to be a great player. I'm like, that's not what the title was about.
Were you overwhelmed or were you pretty mature for your age and took it on stride?
I was so focused. I was naive. My father only gave me X amount of information so that he didn't have to figure out things. He protected me in a great way so that I just would focus on what I needed to do for my sport and still be a human being. All these different things that would come across and these different options and different things and everything. You know, I was so focused on what I wanted to do for hockey. I mean, even today, like I met my wife, I was 15. She was 13 years old. We're still together 40 years later.
Oh,
I mean,
great.
I was so
that's great.
Wow.
Into
yeah,
what I wanted to do that none of the other stuff mattered to me. It was just about being with my friends. I still have my first goalie, Mites, lives a couple streets down. We see each other all the time. I was so into family and friends and being a part of it. I never got caught up with that, which was what my parents did well.
Hey, we got a couple minutes, and I always throw this out. It's kind of like the Mancini minute. give us the. We'll start with you, Bobby. Then we'll go over to Mike on this. You can't pick the cities you played in. So give me the best fans and the worst fans, 30 seconds. I'll start with you, Bobby, then we'll go over to Mike. Worst fans in any city.
The worst fans. Now, are you talking about for me or just in sports general?
Yeah, you know, the place where, oh, geez, we're going back to this joint again.
Okay, you so know. as an enemy, obviously Philadelphia was the worst because they had the glass that was only 2 feet tall and they could lean over and spit on you and throw stuff on you. It was horrendous. I love Chicago Stadium. When they played that national anthem and they had respect for both teams, it was incredible. When we went to the finals in Boston, it was incredible. Boston fans are absolutely unbelievable. They have such passion. The Ranger fans in New York were there, but they were kind of nasty too. That's why they were in the middle between Philadelphia and Boston.
And the best, how about the best? The fish tacos, the surfboards in Los Angeles?
No, I wasn't there yet. It was kind of, the forum was still Magic Johnson. We weren't really a part of that just yet. Just got there. I missed the big time there, but no, it was a social event in LA.
Wow. Love it. Hey, Mike, give us your best and the worst.
Well, kind of easy for the worst. Shea Stadium was the worst. I mean, Shea was the... You didn't have a family relative that these people didn't talk about. Moms, sisters, daughters. I mean, oh, you're talking about some rotten people there. Oh, my God. And loud and obnoxious. And hey, you know what? The best thing you do is just keep your mouth shut and just try to push out of your mouth.
It sounds like Satan's playground.
Well, you know what? It was fun just to watch. Like the fights up in the upper deck, and you'd see all the cops come, and you'd see just these guys just wailing on them with billy clubs, and it'd be like 50 people. They have these mini riots, and it was like, oh, good, you know what? Hit them in the teeth so they can't talk anymore.
Well, I have to say, this show has been so much fun. We could sit here all night with the both of you, Michael and Bobby. We just ask you to hang around a bit because we like to do a little chant when we say goodbye. Do you want to join us when we do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, as long as I don't have to sing.
Yes, chant. You'll know what to say.
It's a kumbaya city.
Well, we have to wrap this up. It's been so much fun. And I have to say that Thanksgiving is next week. And one thing I am so thankful for is for Mark and Sal and all our guests. And I have to tell you, WWDBAM with Brett and Laura and Sam and Mike and everybody who's helped us along the way. We are so thankful for you and hope that each and every one of your families, as well as all our listeners' families, have a wonderful, happy, and healthy Thanksgiving. And on Thanksgiving, you can't get enough of Liberty Bell smack, right? So you're going to dig out through the archives that we have, and we are going to play our pilot episode that featured Mr. Warren Brewster and Mr. Randy Lurch. It's a show you won't want to miss on Thursdays, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And then we will return on Thursday, December 2nd for a live show with voiceover actress Mandy Fisher and the former president of the National Hall of Fame and Museum, Tim Mead. So be sure to tune in and make sure you follow us on Facebook at Liberty Bell Smack, and you can get all the information and everything is good, right, Mark?
Well, hey, you know what? We got to give these guys passes. Let them bring their friends. Let's turn Philadelphia. Let's take over Philadelphia.
Hey, you know, if we take it over, we're going to give it back.
And you can leave those two, Sal and Mark, sleeping under the Liberty Bell.
Just take the steak and cheese and run.
Yeah.
Well, that it sounds like a throwdown. You guys have to come back on the show. Yep. We absolutely loved yous. And Sal, what's your last parting words for this Thanksgiving?
I would like to wish everybody a great holiday. And remember that it's all about family. And, you know, not to get too sentimental, but, you know.
Sal's been working out. He's working those biceps.
You think?
Yes, yes.
He's been running the Rocky statue up.
But, that's so he can lift the turkey. With respect to Thanksgiving, I just want to say to everybody, remember, there are two kinds of wealth, the amounts of your possessions or the limitations of your wants. So have a good holiday.
Well, that's really sweet. And then he could use those biceps to lift that turkey out of the oven.
Money comes and goes. Relationships are priceless.
That's right. That's right.
And those are the words of Mr. Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia. And I'm Marianne Costello, and we are your show hosts for Liberty Bell Smack every week. And Bobby and Michael, we love to close our show with a chant. And what we do is we count it down from 5 to 1, and then we all say Liberty Bell Smack all at the same time. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Sure.
Okay.
Nice to meet you too, by the way.
And that does it here for all of us here at Liberty Bell Smack. I'm Marianne Castell, along with Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia, your wonderful hosts every single week on WWDB 860 AM Thursday drive time. It's actually primetime drive time, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And here we go, guys. Are you ready?
Yes.
Five.
Four. Three. Two. One. Liberty Bell Smack. That's what I'm talking about.